Hello, I'm Katie Manning, and you're very lucky because you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Enjoy!
I'm Stargate Pioneer.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
A podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts
at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and beyond. Your GPR hosts are Jay Witten.
Safety measures are for chumps who don't know what they're doing.
Kier Hansen.
Oh, hold on. I saw it on my mixer. I turned up the suck. Hold on.
And Haley Malley.
I feel like I might need to carb up for next week's episode.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do discuss recent news, episodes that have already aired in their home territories, and the occasional interesting rumor. But don't worry, if we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 299 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where confirmation and consternation have a scandalous tryst, while the theoretical and parenthetical stare in from the doorway like a couple of creepers. I feel dirty just reading that. I'm Jay.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Kier. This week, we take a deep breath at the crest of this long wait between seasons before we plunge downward into wild, nearly apoplectic anxiety in the weeks just before the 13th Doctor and her new friends come winging across the airwaves and the fiber optic cables into the eyes and the ears of most eager fans. So it is time to, as we feel, take stock of what we know, what we think we know, and what are still the known unknowns, you know?
Okay. Totally know.
And if you don't know, now you know.
But yeah, if there's the known knowns and the known unknowns, then
what about the unknown unknowns?
Right. Well, true knowledge is in knowing you know nothing. So
the greatest obstacle to learning is knowing.
And that's also half the battle. G.I.G.
All right. I'm getting lost now.
Okay. Damn it.
Somebody's been paying attention.
We are within weeks of a new series of Doctor Who, and the introduction of our first female doctor.
Yes.
The doctor's a woman?
Well, there's been, we've been sort of, you know, ticking off the confirmed things along the way as we've been getting them fed to us over the course of the last few months. There was that big spike, SDCC, when a lot of things got dumped on us because Chris Chibnall, well, first made an appearance. Hey, that's a big thing on itself. And had quite a bit to say along with the vast majority of the cast, short Bradley Walsh, but a large percentage of the cast, and Matt Strevens, co-producer, and move things forward considerably in our expectations. There are still more things coming at us because we were really wondering, well, guys, the director's list that we've sort of confirmed, sort of not confirmed, BBC never really came forward and said, yes, these are the directors, but IMDb already has them credited and Wikipedia, and if it's on Wikipedia, it must be true.
Well, yeah.
But what about writers? And we're still, that was this big cloud. Well, today, we have a big movement forward in that as well. Well, a couple days prior, but as we're recording, we've had a lot to digest. And a rumor, well, rumor? Could be a misprint. Hasn't been officially confirmed, but we got some information about dates too. So we'll leave that way to the end, so that if you don't want to hear it because it hasn't been officially sanctioned by the BBC as of our recording date, we'll tell you when to plug your ears.
Right.
But do we want to like go through the specifics, kind of take this top down? Here's the basics for people that have just said, you know what, I put myself under a rock after Capaldi said goodbye, and I didn't want to know anything, but now I feel as if we're in the home stretch. Take me through, hey, what's going on with this Doctor Who show that you love so much?
Yeah, let's do that.
So explain it to me like I'm five.
Well, see, there's this show about a time-traveling doctor.
Whoa, you can travel through time?
What's a show?
Or maybe not five. Let's say like 15.
Well, then it becomes much more complex to explain.
Oh, crap. Emotions.
So, I mean, let's see. What's the first one that we've got here is that...
Well, basic casting. let's just know who are we dealing with? Who are our key players?
Is there going to be a doctor this season?
Odds are good. My sources say yes. Spoilers.
Well, so the, I mean, obviously with this huge news article, even muggles know about it. We've got Jodie Whittaker taking over the role of the doctor. Mm. I mean, this is exciting stuff. And we've, you know, heard so very little about her. We've got like the one trailer that she speaks in and it's, we know that everyone on the cast and crew is thoroughly excited about this.
Yeah.
No one has had anything, well, nobody involved in the show has had nothing negative to say.
Precisely.
There is that toxic segment of the fandom that, you know, won't shut up, but.
Yeah. They are the component that makes fandom an F word.
But we don't have to talk to those people.
Yeah, step right past that. But we've used some of this downtime to get to know Jodie's body of work as well as we can, whether it be from the dramatic material. Everybody obviously knows her from Broadchurch and her involvement within that series with Chris Chibnall and some other Doctor Who alum, but also getting to see some of her film work, both dramatic and comedic, and even to a certain degree, action roles. I would say Attack the Block was kind of an action...
Yeah, action comedy kind of.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
But we get to see the kind of scope of the way that she can play the straight character, the quirky character, the straight up comedic character, the emotional tugging, and ranges in between. So we've even seen her get thoroughly angry and have emotional breakdowns, particularly from Broadchurch. But yeah, really eager to see that, and even what we've seen from the trailer. Obviously, you know, keeping her Yorkshire accent, fantastic.
Yes,
you
know, love it.
Lots of places have a north.
and the fact that one bit of news that we're not going to discuss, and I know it was a little bit of a wrinkle just this past week, was the one comment from one individual within the BBC that said it was something kind of disparate. He was trying to convey it as a positive statement about this coming series, but said something to the effect of, and I'm going to paraphrase just because I don't want to get into the specifics of the phrasing, but it was a matter of, gone are the days of the quirky and eccentric Doctor. This is going to be much more to the point, take you through it, teach you something, make you feel something. I don't know if that was the best prepared statement in the world from a BBC controller.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was...
Yeah. But it bothered people up and down the spectrum, from people that have written and edited and worked for the show for years to fans that have been committed to it since the 60s or shortly thereafter, to people that are just getting invested in it now and they have expectations and they just know maybe the last couple of series leading up to this.
Well, after that statement came out, it was quickly rebuffed by other people involved in the show saying, no, it's still going to be quirky. We're still going to have fun. The Doctor is still going to be the Doctor.
You know? Right. I mean, if you can't glean that from the trailer, just the fact that she's having a blast with this and wants her friends to feel the same, then that's it just felt like a total misstatement.
But right.
We will move past that. And just say that there's every indication that she and the cast that she's working with. So we're looking. You've got a straight up established veteran comedian in Bradley Walsh playing Graham. He has been hilarious on social media through the filming experience and just having a blast with it, knowing that he's the old guy on the block, and he owns that and still has a great time with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not present at SDCC, so he couldn't defend himself. So they came crashing down on him every opportunity. But I'm sure he could take it on the nose better than most.
He got his licks in from not on the stage.
It's true. That's true. He had to get a statement in. He just had to do it remotely. And then you've got Tosin Cole playing Ryan. So we got to know him a little bit better. I was not really familiar with a lot of his other body of work, not being able to see some of the other British series that he had been in. I had seen a little bit more from Mandeep Gill as Tasman, or who will be playing Tasman. But... you guys watched the interviews, the press junkets that were being done all around SDCC, and getting to hear their words and their reactions and their opinions of the process and the indoctrination of becoming part of something larger than any other project that they've worked on to date, admittedly. What's your feel about the two of them?
You know, it feels a lot like other times that we've gotten a new companion who is someone that's relatively unknown, at least stateside. Uh-huh. You know, they're not, from what I've gathered, I haven't been able to like really
dig into it. Like, they're not huge fans of the show. That like, they're not the kind of people that have watched it since birth, but they're really excited about it now. Like, they've gotten involved and they've met the fans and they're really thrilled to be a part of it. And I think that that goes a long way, is when you get in and realize that this is a much larger thing. And they really have, like, taken on that kind of mentality that you've got to have.
Yeah. I think it was Tosin that said that he was going back and actually was going through the back catalog now. He wanted to have a fuller understanding of the of where the program has come from and where certain things have evolved out of. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not necessary. We've had a number of companions and supporting actors in recurring roles that have not made that kind of investment, but it just shows that he's interested enough in he wants to be in this for a while. You know, he's invested in this. So, and they all seem to have that opinion. We also have, over the course of the information that has been disseminated to us, we know, actor Sharon D. Clarke is going to be in for a recurring role. To what capacity, I'm not really sure. Maybe it's a parental attachment to one of the two kids. I'm not entirely.
Somebody's mom, somebody's wife.
Yeah. It could be Bradley's wife. I'm not really sure. I'm kind of surprised that news bit dropped and she was really excited about it. And then it just vanished just as quickly. You know, we were on to try to find out more things. But if you remember back a number of months ago, Alan Cumming opened his big trap on a podcast.
Yeah.
So at least we know. Well, at least we know he's going to be in there as King James the First at some point, to some degree.
Eventually.
Fine. Oh God, I can't wait. I can't wait.
You know, it's not what everybody thinks of, I'm sure, when they see Alan Cumming, but I always think of his role in Spice World every time I see him.
Sure.
Because I think it was probably the first thing I ever saw him in.
Yeah, I'm thinking Macbeth. I don't know. You're going to Spice World.
Never heard of it.
It's on the same level, you know. British writers. Mm-hmm. Sure, I see that. Yeah. Well, now what about structurally? What about as far as what we can expect from the lay of the series to come?
Well, so, I mean, we know that we're going to get just 10 episodes this series, not including the Christmas special.
Right. Which we don't know really anything about yet, other than the director.
Yes. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. But first episode is supposed to be a long one, right? Mm-hmm. Like 65 minutes instead of the traditional 50 and change.
Yeah.
So, you get an episode and a quarter. So count that.
But we don't have any multi-part stories. It's all single episode.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you two. I've been talking to a lot of people about this, you know, because we use this as a lead-in question when we get to know people as Whovians for the first time. We always love to find out what kind of story styles they enjoy.
Right.
And we've met a lot of people that say, oh, I love the one-and-dones. Just tell me a good story and just button it up at the end of the week and then give me something next week to look forward to that might be a totally different kind of experience. And that's great. I totally understand that. Some people really get invested in the longer arcs, and that's fine. That's their thing. But the people that just want the, I hate to say monster of the week, but yeah, monster of the week kind of stuff, are going to have this to look forward to. But does this then mean, or do you feel that this means something for the tone of the way these episodes are going to be done? Because if you remember, Chibnall said up there on one of the main Hall H panel discussions that this was going to be something very approachable that people would be able to come into not only from episode one of series 11, but even in the episodes to follow, and still come into it cold and get a good entertaining story out of it, even if they don't understand all of the nuances of the history of the program.
Well, I mean, that is one of the good things about the single story seasons, is that you don't have to worry about somebody just stumbling in for episode two, thinking, oh, you know what, I've constantly been hearing about that Doctor Who show, it's about time I check that out, and what the hell is going on? I don't understand anything. Like, it's, you know, you don't have to worry about that so much with the single stories.
Right.
You know, I always forget there are people that still watch TV that way until I go to my parents' house. They're just like, oh, what's on tonight? And BBC America, or BBC, I guess, if you're in the UK, and you just turn it on for that evening to watch that episode.
Well, I think in this instance, it's really important for this series, because like I said earlier, you know, the fact that Jodie got cast as the Doctor is a huge news story. Like, people know about it who never watched sci-fi, let alone Doctor Who.
Right.
You know, And so there's going to be a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, I remember hearing about that. I want to check that out and see how it is. But none of them are going to stay on top of when the series starts. You know, they're going to like be flipping through, see something on Facebook, be like, oh yeah, I meant to check that show out. I'm going to catch the next one or something like along those lines.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, not to, I mean, we've had the conversation for quite some time about why have they not given us a start date yet? You know, wouldn't this be something that they'd want people to start to plan for, plan mm-hmm. around, and so forth? You know, we'll get to that momentarily. But the idea of when the date is confirmed, announced, and out there, I would assume that they're going to have specific marketing campaigns targeted towards the looky-loos who may have heard about these upheavals in passing and thought, well, you know, when that comes around, maybe I'll watch the first episode or so and see what all the hubbub's about. But they are very prone to forget, so they're going to have to make sure that through targeted marketing, they are getting back in front of the eyes and ears of these people and saying, yeah, you remember how you said you were thinking about catching it? Well, it's next week, so, you know, yeah. Cancel your date or whatever.
I'd like to think that that's something that they've got in the works, but anytime I want to give BBC marketing the credit of the, you know, the benefit of the doubt, it just one word always kind of undermines a class.
Class. Yeah.
And just to be clear, it's not coming next week. That was just an example.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So, well, that being said, I mean, as far as the lay of the series, we know that we'll get the 10, slightly longer first episode. Not really sure whether we're going to stay to traditional running time for the episodes to follow. Some of that may have to do with the decision about what day of the week they choose to air it on and what they know that they're up against and so on and so on. But then there's also the fact that when they were talking about the nature of the stories, and we'll get into a deeper bit on that momentarily, that we may have a Dalek-free season. That's every indication at this point.
They've done that before.
There have been like visual references. There's been like a Dalek in a crowd of baddies,
or you know the random eye stalk that the Doctor tosses aside while going through junk.
Yeah. There's never been any real confirmation about the nation clause. You know, depending on who you ask, it's a myth, or it could be just something where it's superstition. At this point, no one's really sure, so let's not chance it, because I don't want to dig through the legal documentation, but I don't know. I don't think it's necessary. I know a lot of people, and I know this is going to sound like sacrilege, it may not be my personal opinion, but I know the opinion is out there, that a lot of people are tired of seeing the rehashed primary three villains, mm-hmm. you know? So maybe it's time to either tap into the archives and use something like an interesting, you know, one from the way, way back machine kind of a pull, or, as Chibnall has said, new monsters, new villains. Mm-hmm. And full stop. and every week is going to be something entirely new.
Oh, come on. I want to see a new monster against a Peladon. Bring it on.
Okay.
On. Yep. I mean, think Godzilla versus Mothra kind of thing.
I just want to hear Jodie Whittaker sing Venusian lullabies. Aroo, aroo, aroo. But yeah, so I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-mm. Especially because of the fact if you're trying to win over an entirely new audience here, or at least make sure that you are cultivating the next generation of audience, you might want to start from ground zero. Maybe he's got some ideas for something that will be the next Weeping Angels, you know, or the next Vashna Narada, or what have you. Well, maybe Vashna Narada is not a good example.
I was going to say, they seem like a good villain, but we've never seen them again since.
I still think that's a pretty genuinely creepy concept.
Undoubtedly.
But all right, so let's start getting into what we think. This is where things get a little cloudy, because we don't have absolute confirmation of we don't have episode titles. We don't even know all of the shooting locations as they're attributed to each episode. We know directors. We know now, hey, as of the last couple of days, we know writers, which may tell us some things. But we don't know necessarily how many times we're going to be going backward, forward, on Earth, off world, or combinations thereof, other than what we can glean from the trailer and a couple of set report things that have been officially confirmed by the BBC. So where does a lot of that lie?
Well, we know there's at least one story with Rosa Parks in the civil rights era in the U.S.
Mm. That seems to click with what we saw some of the imagery going by in the trailer, which was, I think, where they were when they were shooting in South Africa. They used that sort of very barren climate. But I saw a bunch of 60s cars and whatnot laid out in what looked like a motor lodge sort of a setting. And then them running past all the dried out water tanks and things. There's that one sequence where they're running past. Yeah. And that, you know, you were surrounded by a lot of kind of rusted out trucks from the 50s and early 60s. So I would assume that that's that connection.
Yeah, it's kind of what we're thinking.
If we've got King James the First.
Well, clearly we're going far past, yeah.
It's either that or somebody's time scooping him. And dropping him modern day, which would be awesome.
Yes.
That could be fun. That could be a lot of fun.
This is my friend Socrates. Ben Lincoln.
Sigmund Freud.
We know we will have some off-world experiences, though, because there were a couple of shots there where we were definitely on some sort of an alternate planet location. Not to mention the fact that we're supposed to be having some sort of a really interesting backstory as to how the Doctor comes about acquiring their new Sonic, which has a very alien look to it.
Right.
Which may or may not be connected in some way to this very strange new look to the TARDIS interior. Which we're not going to discuss in great detail, because the set designers are really pissed.
And understandably so.
Yeah. But there seems to be a theme, not only with the appearance of those practical elements, but also through the logos and a lot of the marketing material, where there's been a lot of these crystals floating around. Obviously, a crystal is the primary component of the new Sonic. Mm-hmm. So there's something to that. You know, maybe she goes and she invades Superman's Fortress of Solitude and crosses the streams or something.
And I mean, I don't know if it was postulated to us or if it came about in our speculations or whatever it was, but I mean, you think crystals and Doctor Who, and the first thing that should come to mind is
Metabilis.
Metabilis.
Metabilis. Damn you, Smith.
So,
But they'd have to be blue.
Well, Just because that's all we've seen doesn't mean that there's not, you know, a red side to the planet.
Metabilis 2.
They're color-coded for your convenience.
If we blew up the first two, there's chunks of them floating around like Krypton. We'll all go live on Metabilis 3 with the spiders.
Do the red Metabilis crystals kind of cancel change your powers or something?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it works.
Makes her really angry.
Science.
The Doctor's name is really Jor-El. Wow, we're really drifting on this.
Been a while, guys.
So
this is what happens when we don't get new content.
So as mentioned, we have some confirmation now from the BBC within the past week about who is going to be part of the creative force, both from the director's chairs and now from the writer's chairs. And we've discussed the directors as when that news came forward. The fact that we've got a more diverse crew of directors now, with the four that have been announced. So Chibnall will have a few. Sally Averman will have. I'm never going to pronounce this right.
Abrahamian.
Abrahamian. I'm still saying it wrong, but I don't know otherwise.
I'm not going to even try and correct you.
I'm just claiming stupidity on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But who has had a two-decade career in directing for television, won numerous awards, and she's been a fan of the program since the earliest days. She said she was the type who would sit back on the couch and watch it through her fingers. So there's a labor of love in this.
True dyed-in-the-wool fan.
Yep. Jamie Childs, who has gotten involved with this, who is not only responsible for taking the helm for the first episode proper that we will be handed, but also directed the reveal in the woods, the pulling down of the hood. So Jamie's job is going to be literally to be defining, setting the tone and giving us our first impression of the Doctor moving forward. So just
a small ask.
Sure, you'll do fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Jennifer Perrott, who's been doing a lot of short film work, but has just come off the heels of working on an HBO and BBC One collaboration for a historical drama series called Gentleman Jack. So has the chops on doing period pieces. Pleased to hear that.
Yeah.
and Mark Tondry, whom the more I find out about him, the more I realize, oh yeah, that episode of that show, and gentleman from Zimbabwe, first black director for the show, I believe. Okay, so we're moving forward in our diversity spectrum there. Has worked on Gotham, actually, right before I tapped out of Gotham. I think I saw one of his episodes. Black Lightning, which I'm in the midst of right now and loving. Haley, you've been watching that one?
Yeah, I saw all that. It was real good.
Okay, gotcha. Have you looked over to see which episodes were his?
Nope.
Okay.
I also watched all of that show at once, so I probably wouldn't remember distinct episodes anyway.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Binge it like you do something like Luke Cage. George R.R. Martin had a series called Night Flyers that I'm not personally familiar with. But apparently he worked on that program as well, and numerous others. So has a lot of chops working within the science fiction, the fantasy, and the action superhero realm. So that's going to be a great asset as well. But now we get to our writers. This was the big cloud, this big unknown for so long, because we didn't know, all right, is Chibnall just going to write everything? Is he just going to treat this like Broadchurch and say, no, it's my sandbox, my toys?
Right.
Apparently not.
No, yeah. He's brought on quite a team, actually.
Yeah. But this finally puts to rest our conversation about, was the writer's room thing going to happen? And the answer is sort of.
Yeah. So we've got Chibnall who's going to be taking the pen for 5 episodes, which we're kind of used to something similar with, you know, Moffat always loved doing the season opener, the season closer, occasionally one or two in the middle of the season kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Christmas episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. So that's completely understandable. We've got Mallory Blackman, who...
Yes. I'm amazed she has the time to do this. She is one of the most prolific YA authors I know, and she is like right at the peak of her career right now. We were talking about when Patrick Ness got tapped for Class. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, he's just put out like 2 consecutive series. He's really cranking out a lot of material right now. Does he even have the time to do this? Marjorie Blackman...
It's okay, and I'm not Blackman, taking up much of his time.
She's in a very similar situation. In fact, if not more so. But everything that she's been saying has been... And this is funny. You go along the list of the writers. Almost all of them that have been announced in this last statement have all said, yeah, I've been waiting for this call for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with Noughts and Crosses. I did not get a chance to really get invested in Pigheart Boy or some of the other printings, but her career is skyrocketing right now, and the fact they've got her on this is just going to put her in the stratosphere, and I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly excited about this one. And
yeah,
and I mean, obviously, as we've kind of alluded to, female writer, which mm-hmm. you know, we've been chomping at the bit for lately, and she's not the only one, which is the big thing.
Yeah,
that's the exciting thing. But
right, because we also have Joy Wilkinson,
right,
who's mm-hmm. coming off. She's done a tremendous amount of TV material as well, because she's just done stuff on the really popular series like Casualty and Doctors and so forth. But she's also worked in the Life and Times of Nicholas Nickleby, which is a really popular sort of encapsulated series that has been getting a lot of acclaim. So I think she's going to be a phenomenal asset as well. Knowing what I've been looking over from her body of work, I think she's going to be more responsible for a lot of the transitional episodes, the ones that have to do with, okay, well, relationships have just taken a serious turn, because the stuff that she's worked on have been things that have been almost kind of, I think, were you guys into series like ER and stuff like that when they were at their peak?
Bit, yeah.
Okay, right. So large ensembles, and you had a lot of relationships and a lot of interactions and a lot of opinions between characters and dynamics between characters, but there'd be some critical event within an episode that would suddenly shift, not alliances, but just shift general demeanor of characters dramatically, either to the good or to the bad, within a single episode. And that's the kind of stuff that I understand that she's really adept at conveying both visually and structurally within the episode about, okay, the game has just changed. And whether it's happening in this story or in the stories to follow, you realize as a viewer, okay, things are never going to be the same again. So I think that's a tremendous asset to the writing team. So I'm the one X factor in here, the one name that I'm not as familiar with, and I really should be, is Ed Heim. tried to do a little bit of background research, found that he has been winning awards left and right. But I'm not as familiar. I've never watched Skins as a series. But the first episode he wrote for the show, he was nominated for a BAFTA award. So he clearly has his chops.
Beginner's luck.
Yeah. And then he goes and he decides he's going to write some audio dramas and wins awards for those as well. He's never written for Big Finish. Let's just put that up. Yet. But I'd like to find out more about him personally. So if there are, we've got a number of listeners who are familiar with a lot of the series that we're not as invested in. And I'd be curious to know if anyone can identify the kind of the tonality, the sort of the what he brings to the table as far as what an Ed Hein script kind of resembles. I'd love to know. And then who's our last? Oh, no. So we still got two more, right?
Yeah.
Because every indication, you said that Chibnall's probably going to be taking about five, which means everybody else is going to get a one.
Yeah. Which, I mean, we're just doing single story episodes, so it's that right. Works.
Yeah,
So the next one that we've got is Vinay Patel.
Okay.
Who won a Royal Television Society Award for his debut screenplay of Murdered by My Father.
I don't know what I was doing. I just decided one day to write a screenplay. I submitted it. They accepted it. I won a Royal Award. It's nice. Murdered by My Father. I want to find out more about this now, too.
Yeah.
And the more I've been finding out about him, he's another one who has said that this is something both he and the gentleman we'll mention in just a moment have said, yeah, essentially my career has been building up to being asked to write for Doctor Who. I've just been slowly spiraling around the periphery, waiting for someone to ask me if I could write for the show. Because that brings us to Pete McTighe, whom I didn't think I knew until my wife has been fully invested lately in prison shows. I don't know why. Well, I know why. She got really into Orange is the New Black. And then when she was all caught up on that and they hadn't dropped the next series, Netflix, being the helpy helperton that it was, said, hey, maybe you'd like this. Maybe you'd like this. And so she started watching all of these prison shows. So she's like talking cell block slang around the house. And stuff. I have no idea what she's doing. But she said she had been watching this Australian, sort of an Australian, it's not a take on Orange is the New Black, but it is within the women's correctional facility.
It's in the same genre.
Yeah. And she prefers it. Wentworth, she said, is a much better show.
So a bunch of people have been recommending Wentworth to me as well. And they say, once you watch it, you're not going to want to watch Orange is the New Black anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the tone that I've gotten as well. Because it seems to be something where it's not, it doesn't swing for the fences on the dramatic scale. It doesn't try to do the shock and awe kind of stuff. It really just gets you invested in the characters and says, oh, damn, this is a horrible situation. And I either really loathe this person or my heart bleeds for this person or both. So, and I think at some point I walked past and there was a guard locked in a cell and the cell was on fire. Oh, good.
Okay.
Oh, good. So I'm sure Pete will do an excellent job bringing levity and joy. Happiness to the show. But yeah, he was also another one who said he's been basically building his career around wanting to work for the show. I think at some point now will have, I think the way it aligned, we have an Aussie writer and director on the same episode.
Oh, God.
So that's fascinating. I would love to know if that somehow is going to work itself into the script. Have we ever, other than just, I think there was like some point where we really quickly passed through a bathroom in Sydney. Have we ever been on location in Australia?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I can't think of a single one.
I can't imagine they didn't do like a prison colony episode or something, because that seems like it would be really interesting.
Oh, Doctor Who invades Wentworth. Okay.
I was thinking maybe a little earlier in Australia's timeline, but sure.
Ooh, okay. So it'd be like Rabbit Proof Fence. With the Doctor. I love that movie. Oh, I love that movie. So heartbreaking. Anyway, so yeah, and then sort of rounding out the changes within the structure of the production crew, we discussed a couple months back, Sigo Nakanola as our new composer, all kinds of stuff that he's going to be bringing to the table as far as his tone and his style of composition, and has been tasked with reinterpreting I think is the official word, reinterpreting the theme, the intro theme. Dangerous territory.
Yes. That's, it could go so wrong, but it could go so right.
Yeah. I guess it's just a matter of, is a theme and variation where everything is all still there? Okay, note for note, we're really dealing with the same thing, but it's just being sort of rearranged. It's a rearrangement of the same composition.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something where we're suddenly dropping dubstep? Or, you know. Okay. Sorry, it's Deadpool reference. but you know what I mean? I know as far as what he'll be bringing to the episode incidental music and things like that, it's going to be fantastic because we've been listening to his material for months now and I just absolutely adore it. But that theme song is going to be a linchpin.
Yeah.
So.
Because I can guarantee you, the moment that fans hear that, if they don't get on board with that, they're not going to want to hear anything else from him. Every other bit of music in the show is going to be under scrutiny.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely so. Well, it just means you're going to have to make sure your surround system is like on point for the premiere episode, because every aspect of this, we're going to be taking it apart to the smallest nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get the theme before the episode, I'm sure. Right before they changed like all the credits and stuff for Capaldi. Didn't we see the credit sequence before the season started?
I don't think so.
No, because that was actually a fan-made
One that was very similar to what they ended up doing. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They did the fan-made thing, and then they loved it so much, they're like, you know what? We're going to use that.
That's what a clever great idea. We had the exact same one. What a coincidence.
Well, that leads us to another major change, and it's really, it doesn't get a whole lot of conversation, but I think it is going to have a huge impact on the general feel of the program, and that's the fact that for the first time in a decade, Milk is no longer our special effects team.
Yeah.
So. But the team that they're going with has a CV that just is astounding.
Yeah. So Double Negative, who you know from such feature films as Blade Runner 2049, Thor Ragnarok, Black Panther, The Dark Knight Trilogy, Inception, Dunkirk, Wonder Woman, you know, just
never
a few films you may
never
have heard.
Of any of these.
Yeah.
Did they do E.T.?
Yeah. Are these like small art house productions?
Yeah, how about Ghostbusters 2? Like
right.
Okay. All right.
It's not like some, you know, back alley fly by night kind of effects company. Like, yes, we got rid of Milk, but we seriously upgraded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question now becomes, are they going to be able to work down to a BBC television budget? If the titles that they have really hung their hats on are these multi-million dollar projects, and they're being handed a tenth of that or a 20th of that budget to do single episode work, is it going to have to look a little choppy just to get it in the door under budget?
You know, the thing about doing digital effects like this is that most companies will, like, they'll make the assets for whatever, and they'll hold on to those because you never know what you can just pull out and retool for something different. So I don't see this as being a big hurdle for them.
So you're
I think
saying
they've got
season
enough under their belt.
Of,
they've,
this
they've
season's
going
to look like a Zack Snyder movie because they're going to be using his effects.
Hey, you know, say what you will about Zack Snyder, but that man knows how to bring the pretty.
Yeah.
Okay?
Is this where we're going to go? Really? The final minutes of this conversation, we're going to Zack Snyder films.
Hey, I don't think he should ever direct a film, but I mean, he knows how to make things look pretty.
Yes.
It's true. All right.
So,
no,
okay.
No, everywhere they go is going to look like Wakanda. It's fine.
Forever.
I mean, I'm okay with that.
All right. Well, we warned you back at the outset that this was going to be the last little piece of information that we had been handed just as early as this morning here, the day that we're recording, but it has not been officially confirmed as of this recording time.
Right.
So this may be a misprint, or it may just be a slip.
It could be.
Or it could just be good news.
Let's put it this way. We'll give you your source first, okay? Because thankfully this is not the Sun. It's not the Daily. So don't worry about that. It's not the Star. You don't have to worry about any of the usual rags that would make you say, I don't believe it's worth a damn. This is from the Sunday Time Culture Magazine. This is just the... Yeah. You know, the kind of the outlook that says, okay, you know, you look for your entertainment to start to plan your your weekends around. Here's what's coming down the pipeline over the weeks to come. You know, and it discusses various and sundry here. But one of the things that it devotes almost an entire page layout to is the fact that, you know, Doctor Who's returning to the program, or is returned to the airlines, or airwaves, sorry. And it makes a very specific mention of when to see it on BBC One.
Right.
So first I looked at the date and said, whoa! And then I looked up that, what that date
at
was.
At the calendar, yeah.
And said, whoa!
So we'd speculated on this, or it had been kind of rumored, that Doctor Who could potentially be moving to Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And given the date that's printed on this, it looks like that's what's happening.
Yeah. So Jodie Whittaker stars the new series of Doctor Who as to be seen on BBC One on September 23rd. So that gives us a month from this date of record, well, this week of recording, which is about 2 to 3 weeks sooner than we expected it.
Right. I mean, because we've been set for October. That's when we were aiming. That's what we figured.
Yeah. We had, like, we were trying to, like, figure bank holidays and things like that, what might make sense to sort of structure it around based on what other sporting events we're going to be airing to compete or not compete against. But, all right, so let's talk this through for a second. If this is true, and I would assume that after, you know, this news hitting on a Sunday, it's kind of scrambling. Some people are kind of saying, I don't know whether to trust this or not. And that's absolutely valid. This may have been a misprint.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been. Just for a quick second, hot second, since I don't have a calendar. Let me flip here. If I go to October, if it was a misprint, even if it was a misprint and it was supposed to say October, it would not have been October 23rd because that's a Tuesday.
Right.
So, I mean, if it's a misprint, then they got the month and the date wrong.
Yeah, because November doesn't even work. And nobody believes it would have been November anyways.
Right. So this sounds pretty valid. So let's talk about ramifications for a second here. I personally think the transition to Sunday would be a really great one for a number of reasons. And I know we've had some listeners that have chimed in and says, all right, well, the stuff you're getting uppity about, or that you think, don't worry about what it competes or doesn't compete with, because that's not really valid in the way things are broadcast in the UK and blah, 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 blah. I totally get that. But I'm looking at it as the idea of availability of a lifetime viewer in the UK and the decision that will have to be made by BBC America about how they choose to air it in the States if it does take place on a Sunday. Because here's what it comes down to, and you two can kind of tell me what you think of this. I still think, and this is totally uneducated opinion, and I will be the first to say I am an uneducated individual. But if you air it live with the UK on a Sunday, so if they go, say it's 9 p.m. local time in the UK, then that puts us at the 6 hours of that time of year, 6 hour offset for East Coast in the United States, which means they're airing at three in the afternoon Eastern up against football on a Sunday. For people that don't want to watch football, there are some of us.
It happens.
And then they air it again prime time on a Sunday night for the American audience.
You know, and that's how they would have to do it. If they were going to do it synchronized with the UK, they would have to do a repeat, an encore performance in prime time.
Yeah.
To make sure that they catch the bulk of the American audience.
Mm-hmm. And BBC One does rebroadcasts all the time.
Right.
They double air things within a week. They put it into it was like the days of HBO, where a movie would drop on a Friday evening, and then they run it again midnight Friday, and then four times on Saturday, and blah, 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 just so that everybody got a chance to see it. So I don't see a downside. Maybe there is one, and everyone can feel free to educate me. Please, educate me.
No, I mean, there is an absolute downside. When am I going to get my reruns of Star Trek The Next Generation if they're going to take up all my time with Doctor Who?
In the hour before and after they broadcast it, and all of the hours in between the broadcasts.
Okay. Are they still going to be able to fit wrestling into the schedule?
That was
sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Okay. It's only a matter of time, man.
All right.
So, but again, it's a matter of, I personally think that it has advantages to doing that. I'm pleased about the Sunday broadcast. I think that's going to do a lot for exactly some of the things that the production crew has been saying that they want to do. They want to make sure that this is approachable and attainable by an audience that isn't there to watch it anymore or doesn't want to make the time. They're not watching anything, you know? it's not necessarily going up against some of the big juggernauts for the night, like Strictly Come Dancing, that might run, you know, doesn't run exactly on the schedule against that. But it's a matter of, as you were saying, Haley, it's like you put on a channel and it stays on that for the evening because that's just, it's a matter of convenience, or that's just the way that we do things in this house. You know, but if you're a younger audience who you're trying to really farm to be your next viewers, you want them to get invested in the program, yeah, odds are going to be good that by 9 p.m. on a Sunday night, they're probably going to be back home.
Or,
well, if it's, you know, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, noon on the West Coast, they haven't gotten out of bed yet. They might as well turn on BBC America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hangover and watch television. It while they recover and wait for their pizza to be delivered.
Or, you know, there's the random off chance that you recognize that the vast majority of your audience doesn't watch TV on a schedule like that anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Air it like you're supposed to. Fine. You know, get the prerequisites out of the way. And then instantly put it up for streaming on, you know, BritBox or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give your audience access to the show in the means that they want to watch it.
Yeah. And I think actually I'm getting the indication that just because of just the sheer savvy. I think Chibnall and Stevens and company may be a little bit more hip to that kind of broadcast mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, HBO figured this out with Game of Thrones. Like, you can stream it on their streaming services as soon as it starts airing, and it's available there. And they're, like, that's the most pirated show on television. They're trying to work with their audience.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a premiere. It's not a broadcast. It's a launch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's out there for you by whatever your means of consumption are.
And so, I mean, that's the thing, is they need to stop getting so hung up on viewership numbers on, you know, when it airs on BBC One, because that's not going to tell you anything anymore.
Yeah. Well, the only last thing that I'd like to get any sort of an indication from at this point. Well, obviously I want some confirmation from the BBC that yes, this is what we're going to do. And sorry, it was a misprint. They jumped the gun on this. We didn't give them the go ahead to announce this, but they did. So cat's out of the bag. Yeah, fine. Congratulations on Sunday. And they'll find some way to spin it so that it sounds great. And I'm sure, I personally think it is great.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm still waiting to see, and it's not anything that they're going to announce, they're just going to do it. And the only way to really know that they're going to be doing this is really by watching things like their YouTube and their Instagram feeds very closely, is whether or not they will be doing anything webisode. Some previews, some teasers prior to each episode. Really make it kind of a, if they're going to broadcast as late as Sunday, then maybe Friday or Saturday, they give you a little breadcrumb. Little 15, 20 second little taste so that people remember, oh yeah, I got to be home by Sunday night. Because I just saw this, you know, as I'm waiting in line, you know, to get my chips and whatnot. I'm looking over Instagram and BBC America dropped me this little this little 20 second webisode that's related to the episode to come. Oh, that looks cool. I got to make sure I'm home.
Yeah, that would do it.
That's what I would do. Yeah, yeah. When they hire me. Right. So
it's inevitable. It's coming.
Yeah. But that's what we got. I mean, it's a lot to digest. It's a lot to look forward to. You know, and even the stuff that isn't quite confirmed, the fact that it's still kind of cloudy out there and has not been discounted is still interesting in its own right. And if that date is right, man, and we're only a month away.
Happy birthday to me.
Yeah. I had this conversation I had a room full of Whovians in front of me today. And when the news dropped, and half of them were just ecstatic and they're jumping up and down like, oh, we're getting it weeks earlier than we expected. And a bunch of people said, I was waiting until October and I've got plans and I'm going to be on a plane and you bastards and you got, ah. I see there is no pleasing you.
Yeah.
So. Something big happened in next week, Jay.
Is there?
Yeah, well, big in the, like, lowercase b.
I mean,
big
brown
news
numbers
for people
and all
on
that.
This podcast.
So, yeah, it has been, it's been 6 years since we've taken this little podcast on the road and been talking about Doctor Who incessantly once a week for an hour or so.
Yep.
So, yeah, we are approaching our 300th episode next week.
Very, very pleased. And we want everyone's voice to be a part of this as we get around to our 300th episode. So whether it be by tweeting us or commenting on one of our recent posts on Facebook or Instagram, dropping something on the website comments, dropping us a direct email, you know, for those people that still use that funky email thing, or if you're really bonkers and you want to have your voice immortalized in one of our episodes to come, call in on our voicemail line and leave us a message and just give us a little bit of a feel for what GPR has done to you. I was going to say for you. I don't care what it's done for you. I want to know what it's done to you.
With you.
For our international listeners, you can also go on the on our website and use the SpeakPipe link on the right side of the page there.
Yep. And remember, the more talking you do, the less talking we do.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time we actually pulled.
Oh, jeez, it's been forever.
I can't even remember the number. Jay, you know at the top of your head, but I don't know.
And while you're thinking about the nice things that you want to say to us or berate us for whatever, why don't you head over to iTunes and actually leave us a review? Because believe it or not, that helps us out tremendously in growing the show and getting our name out there and that kind of thing. So we would love it if you could go over to iTunes or Google Play or wherever the heck it is that you get this podcast from and just let us know what you think of us. Be it one star, five stars, whatever it is. We don't care. We're not picky.
Exactly. But remember that one star does not mean you guys are number one. I just need to put that out there because, you know, anybody who's run a business and has had Google reviews out there has those people that have said, I love you guys to death. One star. And then you reach them and say, what were you doing? Well, you guys are number one. I gave you one star. What system have you ever gone by?
That's not how any of this works.
Would you rather get one gold star from your teacher or three gold stars? What is, I don't, anyway.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But you'll notice that we've really laid off. We have backed completely down on like the Patreon supports or any of that stuff. We may revisit that in 2019 and stuff and talk to you about some special goodies and things that we can do for you and at you and to you. Yeah, to you.
That's my department.
For supporting us in that department. But right now, we just really want to know your opinions of the program, some things that have worked, haven't worked, things you'd like us to try out. You know, put yourself in the producer's shoes for a little while and see, you know, if I were to structure an episode of GPR, I'd want to hear these three dopes talk about XYZ or YYZ if you're from Toronto.
Because we have no pride. We'll do anything for a cookie.
I'm a consumer whore. And how? So, there you go. So, yeah, chime in. Episode 300 next week. Tell us what you think. Show us what you got.
But for this week, this has been episode 299 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, so I'm just going to go ahead and clear anything off my schedule for the rest of the year. I got to get ready for this.
Safe. And this is Kier saying, you know, all the talk about Series 11, I wish they would just hurry up and announce that Mel and Sue are going to be guest stars already. That's all I want.
And this is Haley saying, I wish they would just hurry up and announce me as a guest star.
We'll see you guys next week.
Allzie.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
I'd watch that for a dollar.